Good everyone, a warm welcome to another edition of The Debate on Press TV. I'm Behrouz Ajafi. Thank you for joining us in the show. Syrians have taken to the streets nationwide to express their outrage at Washington's recent move and its all-out support for Tel Aviv. President Trump has recognized Israel's annexation of Syria's Golan Heights. The UN and the entire international community consider Golan as Israeli-occupied territory. Damascus has pleaded with the United Nations to hold an urgent meeting to discuss what it calls the recent flagrant violation of the relevant Security Council resolution by a permanent member state. The EU has not approved of the U.S. move either. Hezbollah's Secretary General has said in reaction that the only option left for the Syrians is to take back their land. Now we're going to watch a report about some of the latest reactions to the U.S. move first, and then we'll discuss the issue.
Israel's ability to defend itself.
U.S. President Donald Trump has recognized Israeli sovereignty over the occupied Golan Heights in defiance of international calls and criticism.
I will sign a presidential proclamation recognizing Israel's sovereign right over the Golan Heights.
During a meeting with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu at the Oval Office, Trump signed an order officially recognizing the strategic plateau as that of Israel. Trump claims his move will help bring peace to the region, a notion everyone else disagrees with. The shift is largely believed to be a welcome boost for Netanyahu ahead of Israeli elections in April. The Israeli premier is under mounting pressure after being indicted on corruption charges. His popularity is on the wane. Polls show the majority of Israelis want him to resign. In this backdrop, Netanyahu's lavish praise for Trump while he was signing the decree on the Golan was not surprising.
Mr. President, over the years, Israel has been blessed to have many friends who sat in the Oval Office. But Israel has never had a better friend than you.
Meanwhile, Syria has vowed to reclaim its territory through all means possible. Experts say Trump's decision will not change the position of the occupied land.
People in Syria will not give up on Golan, not in the past, not now, and not in the future. I am sure it will be back, and there is a compass for the Syrian army, which is returning the Syrian sovereignty on its entire territories.
Reactions to Trump's declaration have been mounting. Turkey denounced the move as unacceptable and threatened to take action against the decision. Lebanon said no country can change the ownership of the territory, which belongs to Syria. Iran has strongly condemned the move. Russia has warned of a new wave of tensions in the Middle East. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres said the status of the Golan has not changed. The Arab League issued a similar statement. Even Saudi Arabia and Bahrain have denounced the measure, despite attempts by the Persian Gulf kingdoms to forge closer military ties with Tel Aviv. In 1981, a UN Security Council resolution adopted unanimously called on Israel to withdraw from the Syrian territory it occupied back in 1967. In fact, Trump has been more than kind to Israel. In December 2017, he announced the U.S. recognition of Jerusalem al-Quds as the capital of Israel. He also relocated America's embassy to Israel from Tel Aviv to al-Quds, which is occupied Palestinian territory. The U.S. president has dramatically changed the landscape in an already volatile region. No matter how much his actions are welcomed by Israel, they will seemingly pave the way for more conflict and bloodshed in the Middle East.
All right, now time to start to put this issue into debate. Joining me will be Richard Millett, who's a journalist and political commentator from London, and also Richard Becker, who is with the Answer Coalition, joining us from San Francisco. Good to see you both, gentlemen. Now, beginning with Richard Millett, President Trump is offering unprecedented support, like Netanyahu himself said, and you saw that in the report, for Israel, while ignoring other people's rights. No country on the planet recognizes Israel's rule over the Golan Heights except the United States under the Trump administration, of course. Isn't this a unilateral move and in defiance of international law?
You know, we can discuss the law. You want to get legal professors, legal experts, judges in, but what it really comes down to is that when you go up to the Golan Heights, like I was up there a couple of years ago, beautiful, beautiful territory. the problem with it is in the name Heights. It is so high up, and you can see over Israel, you can see over Syria, and ironically, at the moment, it's completely peaceful up there. The Israelis who are in charge of it, there's no war, there's no battle. But you look down on Syria, you can hear, you can see the bombing, you can, you know, the mass slaughter that's been carried out by Assad, supported by Iran, supported by Hezbollah, you know, 500,000 Syrians have been murdered by a brutal monster. And whatever you want to call it, you know, Israel controls the Golan Heights. It's a far better situation, far more peaceful situation. And Israel needs to control it, because without being there, without the military presence on the Golan Heights, you would get the monster who Assad, having been involved in the murder of 500,000 people, of his own people, can you imagine what he would do to the Jewish people in Israel? I mean, it's just, you know, whatever you want to call it, you might not agree with it, but it's logical, it's sensible, and it's a reasonable decision to take, that Israel will always be in control of such a strategic, important position as the Golan Heights.
Now let's ask Richard Becker. Richard, the other Richard, Richard Millett in London, believes that this is a sensible and logical decision by the U.S. Looks like that he's forgotten that that land does not belong to Israel.
In 1967, thousands of Syrians were driven out of the Golan Heights in what was a war of aggression by Israel, particularly directed against Syria and Egypt, and also against Jordan. It was a war of aggression. You know, today you can read in the New York Times, we have Netanyahu talking about, it's okay, we can keep the territory because it was a war of aggression against us. That's a joke. In the book that I did, Palestine, Israel, and the U.S. Empire, I dealt with the issue of Golan Heights. And we have, in 1982, 15 years after the 1967 war, then Prime Minister Menachem Begin said, we must be honest with ourselves. We decided to attack. And the general, one of the generals, Matiyahu Peled, who was in charge of that military operation, just 5 years after the war, in 1972, said, the thesis that the danger of genocide was hanging over us in June 1967 and that Israel was fighting for its physical existence is only a bluff, which was born and developed after the war. So this was a war of aggression. This is by the leaders, the Israeli leaders themselves. They took the territory in a war that they launched, a surprise attack, sneak attack, you could call it, against Egypt, Jordan, and Syria. But even if it wasn't an Israeli war of aggression, they do not have the right to the territory under international law, and no country in the world agrees with the Israeli government except the U.S. government. So, in other words, here we have an example. The U.S. government is often, when it wants to target a particular country, it invokes the idea that somehow the whole international community, as they call it, is with the U.S. Well, here we have very clearly the whole world is opposed to this. And, you know, this is very rich land, by the way, as well. It's not just strategic land. It's very rich agricultural land. And Moshe Dayan, who was the Minister of Defense, so-called, at the time of that war, 20 years later said the Israeli settlers wanted the land. They kept pressing for it, and the Israeli military kept provoking to create the conditions for a war of conquest, an aggressive war.
Now, back to London. Richard Millett, this U.S. recognition approves Israel's violation of the Fourth Geneva Convention that bans occupying powers from transferring its civilians into occupied land. Now, some 20,000 Israeli settlers already live in the occupied Golan Heights. So is there anything on earth that can stop such violations?
Well, no, the Geneva Convention obviously doesn't apply here because Israel hasn't moved hasn't forced, hasn't transferred. You know, people have wanted to move up there of their own volition. As Richard said, it's a beautiful place to live. Beautiful food, you can have. You call it that, I don't call it that. I call it disputed. I had lunch in beautiful Druze villages. The Arabs and the Druze and the Jews live up there very, very peacefully together, all do business together, all eat in each other's houses and each other's restaurants. It's a wonderful place, but there's no breach of international law. In fact, the strongest law supports Israel's right to be there. UN Security Council Resolution 242.
That's ridiculous.
Says it there. I'm not surprising Richard didn't make it. I was going to see if he was going to mention 242, but it obviously doesn't suit his argument. So he wouldn't mention 242. But 242 is a Security Council resolution, legally binding, not like the general resolutions that, you know, are always quoted against Israel that have absolutely no legal force behind them. But UN Nations Security Council Resolution 242 says Israel has a right to be there because of the aggressive war against Israel in 1967. And yes, there could be negotiations.
That's
once
ridiculous.
There is peace. Once there has been peace, has been negotiated between Israel, Syria, and the other surrounding countries, because no country in their right mind would hand back the Golan Heights or the West Bank, what is called the West Bank, is also called Judea and Samaria. No one would hand these strategic territories back while Iran, the present Iranian regime, is around supporting a monster like Assad, supporting Hamas, and supporting Hezbollah. I mean, come on.
We're discussing Golan Heights, Richard. Come on. Okay, Richard Becker, let's have your comments. As far as I hear, there were three UN Security Council resolutions asking Israel to leave Golan Heights.
Yeah, I mean, what is very clear is, and it's now very well documented, that the Israeli leadership in 1967 not only waged a war of aggression, which is undeniable. I mean, they themselves say it was a war of aggression. I mean, Peled, the general, Menachem Begin, the prime minister later, Moshe Dayan, who was the defense minister and temporarily prime minister, these are top leaders of Israel who said, yeah, it was, we did it, let's not kid ourselves, let's not tell stories that have no basis in reality. It was a war of aggression, and immediately after the June war, the Six-Day War, the plan were put into place to annex the Golan Heights and also to try to find a way to annex Gaza and the West Bank and East Jerusalem, but not annex the population. In other words, to continue driving out the Palestinian population who have suffered a tremendous injustice, dispossessed from their homeland, and now is still today in the West Bank living under Israeli occupation, and in Gaza living under Israeli occupation, surrounded by Israeli force, which makes it an occupation, despite the fact that the Israeli troops are sometimes not in the Gaza, although sometimes they are too. So, you know, this is undeniable injustice to the Palestinian people and to Syria and to the Syrian people who were driven out to make way for Israeli settlers to take over their farms and their land. Theft. It's called theft. And it's illegal under international law, and it's unjust under any kind of conditions.
Now, Richard Millett, before Trump announced his decision, five European countries, members in the Security Council, said that they were concerned. Even the close allies to the U.S., Britain and France, they said that they have expressed concern, and they talked about the broad consequences in the Middle East. China and Russia, of course, oppose it. Even Kuwait, a U.S. ally in the Middle East, criticized the idea. Today, the EU disapproved of that. And so this is not in line with the UN. It's not. It's in contravention of international law. So what could be those ramifications that the European states were talking about that this decision could have for the volatile Middle East region?
Well, you know, you keep quoting international law. I mean, as I say, I'd ask your viewers, Beirut, to look at United Nations Security Council Resolution 242. The wording of that is clear that Israel has a right to be on the Golan Heights. Once again, Richard's had two interventions and he hasn't even mentioned 242. He obviously doesn't understand it, maybe he hasn't heard of it, I don't know. But there are important, you know, at the end of the day, these governments of the EU and the countries that you've quoted, Beirut's, you know, it's politicians. They have to say what they have to say to their general public. And I think behind the scenes, there's a general acceptance that the major enemy for most of these countries is Iran and Hezbollah and Hamas. And I think they respect what Israel does. They respect the security situation that Israel's in. They know that Israel has to take precautions. And there's a lot of security cooperation that goes on because they know that Israel is up against it when it comes to these the situation. It's surrounded by terrorist regimes. And I think a lot of these other countries in the world actually, you know, they get a lot of security information from Israel. The EU gets huge amounts of security situation. Israel is the perfect, unfortunately, well, fortunately for the EU, it's perfectly placed for the EU, not necessarily for Israelis surrounded by such terrorist regimes. But the EU likes the politique, it has to play the theatre. But really, I think behind the scenes, they really do accept the situation Israel's in, and they accept fully what Israel does, whatever they might say.
And as for Resolution 242, I just found some information about it, Richard Milliken. It says that this happened after the Six-Day War in 1967, and between it was Israel, Egypt, and Jordan and Syria. Israelis support a resolution because it called on Arab states to accept Israel's right to, quote, live in peace within secure and recognized boundaries, free from threats or acts of force. And this is a different story. Yeah. It was not exactly what you were referring to, and that's for this resolution that you alluded to.
Well, that's what it's about. It was about
well, it's not exactly what you said. Anyway, the whole world, except the U.S., except that the Golan Heights is occupied territory, even the U.S.'s closest allies, and including yourself. You and the U.S., you recognize Golan Heights the other way around. Anyway, Richard Becker, Hezbollah chief Hassan Nasrallah believes that Trump's decision, I'm quoting him, has dealt a knockout punch to what's called the peace process in the region based on the concept of land in exchange for peace. Now, what's the prospect of peace in the Middle East given the circumstances?
Well, I think it's the peace process, so-called, was knocked out quite a long time ago. But I mean, your other guest's interpretation has really come up with a completely unique interpretation of UN Resolution 242. I don't think that one that it said Israel could keep the Golan Heights has ever been expressed before by anyone. So I, you know, he's got something unique going there. And you know, the peace process has no current prospects. And even the opposition to Netanyahu, and of course the timing of Trump's so-called recognition of Israel's right, so-called right, to keep the Golan Heights is very much tied to the election, which will take place on April 9th. Coincidentally, that's the 71st anniversary of the Deir Yassin massacre that Menachem Begin presided over. He was the head of a terrorist group, and he later became prime minister and said, you know, without that kind of action, like without Deir Yassin, there couldn't have become the Zionist state. So you have that kind of a history, and you have in the present time the opposition to Netanyahu, who is being bolstered by Trump, a group of people called Blue and White. Their party translates as Blue and White. Led by three former chiefs of staff of the military and one civilian. And the one civilian, whose name is Yair Lapid, said that his conditions for the Palestinians was that Israel could continue to, even if there was a Palestinian state, Israel could continue to intervene militarily whenever it wanted to, that Israel would keep the Jordan Valley, that there's no such thing as a right of return for the Palestinian people, and that Jerusalem will always be the united, eternal, et cetera, capital of Israel. So that's not the basis for any kind of a discussion with the Palestinians, because it starts out by really saying if they have anything, any kind of an entity, it'll really be a colonial entity subject to intervention at any moment by Israeli forces. And without the Jordan Valley, without Jerusalem, and without the rate of return, then that's a complete non-starter. And so that's the so-called center-left opposition to Netanyahu in the upcoming election.
Okay, Richard Millett, some analysts argue that Trump's recognition of Israeli rule over the Golan Heights can set the stage for Tel Aviv's annexation of the whole or part of the West Bank, too. Richard Becker also mentioned this. Let's have your take on that.
Well, there's...
Because that's also occupied land, the same status.
There are discussions about annexing Area C of the West Bank, which is mainly Jewish people living there. It's, you know, termed Judea and Samaria. But as you know, that part of the land is where the Palestinians mainly live is divided into areas A, B, and C. And there's discussion about annexing C and giving the Palestinians that live there citizenship or residency within Israel. And then, you know, at the moment, the Palestinian Authority governs itself, it governs its people, the PA, Mahmoud Abbas, it governs areas A and B as well. So, you know, they have local elections, they have their own president, they have their own prime minister, they have their universities, they live a fairly good life there. If you go to Ramallah, you know, millions upon millions or billions of dollars is pumped into Ramallah and into the other Palestinian towns and villages and cities. You know, there's no war. That you look at what's going on around them, all the terrible things that are going on. I mean, they have a relatively good lives there.
We're running out of time. Sorry to jump in. We have one last question for Richard Becker. Does this decision have anything to do with the Israeli election that's approaching? You know, some call this Trump's election gift to Netanyahu. 30 seconds, please.
Oh, yeah, there's no question about that. This is Trump trying to make sure that Netanyahu gets elected. Not that he can't get along with the others or the U.S. can get along. They can. But they prefer Netanyahu for his with all his lying and deceit and deception and corruption. Well, you know, we see the same thing in Washington. So they kind of go together and they see Netanyahu as really a kind of aggressive extension of U.S. power in the region.
All right, and that we come to the end of this edition of the debate. Let me thank our guests. We had Richard Millett, journalist and political commentator from London, also Richard Becker, who is with the Answer Coalition, joining us out of San Francisco. And thank you for watching this debate. We'll see you soon.